What does it mean to grow up without words for freedom or love? In North Korea, language itself becomes a prison. Children learn to address friends as comrades, memorize propaganda disguised as math problems, literally counting how many American bastards to kill, and believe their leader can read their thoughts. Even the birds and mice might be listening. This wasn't dystopian fiction. This was childhood in Hisan, a small border town where winter blackouts meant huddling by fireplaces, where paper dolls substituted for toys, and where glimpsing electric lights across the river in China felt like peering into another universe. The rigid caste system called Sungbun determined everything: career prospects, food rations, survival itself. One relative's imprisonment could destroy an entire family's status overnight, transforming respected military officers into social outcasts. When starvation killed millions during the 1990s collapse, people learned to shut off their hearts. Frozen babies abandoned in streets, bodies floating in rivers, this became background noise. That's what hell actually looks like. Not dramatic suffering, but the normalization of horror until compassion itself dies. The 1990s economic collapse accidentally sparked rebellion. When the government couldn't provide necessities, illegal markets called jeongmadongs emerged, and with them, dangerous new ideas. Trading for yourself meant thinking for yourself. Even small transactions offered something revolutionary: control over one's fate. Survival came at brutal cost. Families left children alone for days, bolting doors against threats. Spring became death season when food stores depleted before crops grew. People ate bugs, wild plants, roasted dragonflies. Cicadas were gourmet treats. Public executions taught loyalty through terror. A tuberculosis-stricken man killed for eating a cow, government property too valuable for human hunger. Yet smuggled foreign films revealed impossible worlds. Titanic showed people could choose their destinies, even die for love rather than the regime. This cognitive dissonance, denouncing capitalism while buying smuggled goods, believing in paradise while witnessing mass starvation, became the doublethink required for daily existence. When police arrested a father for smuggling in October 2002, his daughters, ages 8 and 14, were left with rice, cooking oil, and 200 won, which they spent on cookies. For over a month, they nearly suffocated from faulty stoves and slowly starved while enduring mockery as a family of criminals. Their mother shuttled between cities trying to save their father, who'd been tortured and sent to a labor camp, essentially a death sentence. The girls developed pellagra from malnutrition and caught dragonflies to eat. Their father's imprisonment destroyed the family's songbun, and even friends kept their distance. Prison broke him completely. The brilliant, irreverent man vanished, replaced by someone who feared police and refused forbidden South Korean music. By winter 2006, desperation peaked. Walking home after a humiliating New Year celebration at a wealthy relative's house, watching fireworks illuminate the Chinese sky across the dark river, the pull toward that light became irresistible. The 13-year-old girl, barely recovered from emergency appendix surgery, made her way across the frozen Yalu River on March 31, 2007. Her 16-year-old sister had already departed with a broker. Now, she followed with her mother, guided by a pregnant woman, to a small shack. What happened next shattered her understanding of humanity. The broker assaulted her mother, who had offered herself to protect her daughter. At an apartment, they learned the horrifying truth: they had to be sold to remain in China. The negotiation happened before them: mother for $650, daughter for nearly $2,000. Then came separation. Other traffickers took the daughter and concealed her in the mountains. A gangster named Hongwei purchased her back, then presented an impossible bargain: become his little wife, and he'd reunite her family, find her mother, rescue her father from North Korea, locate her sister. At 13, she accepted to save them. The psychological trauma that followed was severe. She experienced dissociation, lost her appetite, engaged in compulsive washing behaviors, and developed emotional numbness alongside deep resentment. Yet, she learned to survive by assisting him in trafficking other North Korean girls. This was the price of keeping her family alive. Her father escaped to China on her 14th birthday, skeletal and dying of cancer. Their reunion was bittersweet. He was heartbroken seeing his daughter transformed into a heavily made-up young woman. In his final moments, she clipped his nails and promised to finish tomorrow. She woke to find him dead, with eyes open. In Korean tradition, this means leaving something unfulfilled. She believes he was still searching for her missing sister. After his death, government crackdowns destroyed the trafficking business. Trapped with a wealthy dealer under surveillance, she convinced her mother they needed to escape. Through missionaries, they learned about a route to South Korea through Mongolia. Their journey through the Gobi Desert was terrifying. Bone-chilling cold, wild animals, constant fear of border patrols, trudging through freezing darkness guided only by stars. When clouds covered the stars, they spotted the border fence at dawn. It was her father's birthday, March 4th. South Korea felt like another planet. The gleaming airport, fashionable people, everything screamed inadequacy. At 15, she tested at second-grade math level. Most challenging was unlearning propaganda, accepting that Kim Il-sung started the Korean War, that having hobbies was normal, that multiple correct answers could exist. Freedom proved exhausting. Thinking constantly for herself felt burdensome after a lifetime of predetermined choices. Nightmares were relentless, always being chased, trying to escape across a river, waking up screaming. She became a learning machine, consuming books voraciously. Reading expanded her vocabulary and complex thinking beyond black and white worldviews. She discovered emotional concepts like different forms of love that didn't exist in North Korean language. Orwell's Animal Farm helped her process experiences through allegory. She studied pop culture obsessively, perfecting the Seoul accent to distance herself from her past. Despite teachers' doubts, she earned her GED just 2 years after arriving and was accepted into Dongguk University, bringing her to tears. At the 2014 One Young World Summit in Dublin, wearing a traditional pink and white hanbok, she abandoned her prepared speech. "North Korea is an unimaginable country," she began, revealing her mother's rape and how 70% of North Korean women face victimization after escaping. "When I was crossing the Gobi Desert, I wasn't really afraid of dying as much as I was afraid of being forgotten." The audience stood crying with her. Writing her memoir meant revealing everything: the trafficking, the sexual violence, the impossible choices. Her mother urged, "You have to tell the world that North Korea is like one big prison camp. If you don't speak up for them, who will?" The moment she decided to tell her full story, she felt truly free. North Korea retaliated viciously, calling her the poisonous mushroom that grew from a pile of garbage, forcing relatives and former friends to denounce her on camera. Though heartbreaking, at least she knew they were alive. Her childhood best friend eventually found her through Facebook after escaping to South Korea. Freedom isn't just the absence of chains, it's finding your voice after a lifetime of silence. We must live fully, loudly, courageously, not just for ourselves, but for those still trapped in darkness.